The Rich Zeoli Show podcast is sponsored by Mike Venaria Jr. with Osperity Private Wealth.
Hi, I'm Mike Venaria Jr., Wealth Management Specialist. Make your retirement dreams a reality by creating your retirement plan today. Call me at 856-252-0107.
So, Tim Walz is done. The Midwestern doofus, the master, the stunning portrait of masculinity, Tim Walz. His political career is finished. Welcome back to the show. Glad you're here today. 855-839-1210 on X at Rich Zeoli. Going to make an announcement a little bit after 5 today. We have Dr. Victoria Coates joining us at 4:30. Professor John Yu joining us at 5 o'clock today. So it's a big show, and it's great to be back with you. Justin, how was your break? How was your new year?
You should know better than anybody that my break involved me getting 2 days off. Other than that, I've been here working the entire time.
Crazy. Well, did you at least have any good fill-in hosts? Any fun? Nothing?
I mean, it was Opelka for most of the time, and you know how good much we love Mike. We had Lou.
We do.
And then I did that. I pulled the double on 3 days to produce Linda's show when you were filling in for Fela.
That's right. That's right. When I got bumped for Linda Kearns. That's right.
Did she text about that at all?
I don't think so.
Because she said she was going to make mention about it to you.
Yeah.
Just to like kind of gloat that she replaced you on your home station.
Kind of bust my chops. No, I don't think I got any. So, oh well.
Interesting.
Now is DeSantis alive? Is he there?
I'm here.
Are you there?
I'm alive. Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, but are you there?
What do you mean, am I there? I'm here.
Are you there at the studio?
No, of course not. Why would you even ask?
I mean, I don't care. I'm not there either. I'm just curious.
No, I am. I'm back in Scottsdale, where the weather is significantly nicer than it was in the Philadelphia area.
God, I just hate him.
May he got on the first plane back to Scottsdale.
I mean, even people that liked you and supported you up until this moment now officially hate your guts that you're rubbing it in that you're in Scottsdale.
It's 70 degrees here right now. When I was in New Jersey, I had to put on a jacket and like hat and gloves every time I went outside. I'm walking around in a t-shirt right now. It's amazing.
No, it's we hate you. We all hate you. I mean, even Linda Kearns at this point hates you for rubbing it. It's freezing out. It's awful out. It's bone chilling. I got cuts in my fingers from it's awful.
Oh, I know. I was not enjoying myself.
As he sits there by the pool, lathering himself up and doing show prep. Yeah. Oh, I know. How do you deal? How do you survive?
Oh, heaven forbid. Well,
I'm not sitting by the pool. I'm sitting by the little balcony here. I'm, you know, just enjoying the sun.
Oh, good. Well, we're really happy for you. You know that? We're really thrilled.
I do. I will say. Yeah. One negative note. I do have a cough. So if you go to me and I start like hacking, I apologize in advance. I've had this cough for like 2 weeks. It just won't go away.
Yeah. Well, we're probably not going to go to you the rest of the show. I think we're going to be fine without you. And we all wish the best for you and hope that cough is not the same thing that took down Doc Holliday.
So. I appreciate it. Yeah. Thank you for your well wishes.
It's the least we can do. And we have some other news today outside of this stuff with Maduro and Tim Walz. We got other stuff too. I think you were telling me, DeSantis, about, I don't know, was it you who were telling me? Are you a fan of that show, Stranger Things, on Netflix? Is that you?
Oh, I like Stranger Things, yeah.
Yeah? You like that? How about Justin? Do you like that show?
I have some interesting comments about the ending, but overall, I'd say, yeah, I like it.
Well, I just started it because I needed something new to watch. It's definitely out there, that show, no doubt about that. But it turns out my son's watching it. He's 11. And so my son and I are both streaming the same show on Netflix, which is kind of a weird place to be. But
oh, nice!
He and all his buddies like it.
Now, did you just start it? Like, are you on season one?
Yeah, I'm on like season one, episode 5 or something. So
it's oh, it's one of those weird shows where it actually gets progressively better from season to season. Like, I think, well, until season five, the last season is probably the weakest of the series, but the best they did was season three and season four. So if you like it from the beginning, you'll probably love it by the end.
All right, good. I hope so, because this thing has become a global internet sensation. It might be the most successful show that they ever had on Netflix, and they didn't want it originally. Did you know that show got rejected many times? I think it was something like 18 times or something it got rejected until they went with it.
I think they actually ended up changing like the name of the series and at least some of the plot line as well. The Duffer Brothers, I believe, are the ones that created it, and they had a heck of a time getting it actually on Netflix.
And apparently, it takes place in the 1980s, which I love, because and Winona Ryder's in it, with my childhood crush, so there's that too, so I'm happy about that. And it's got that cool 80s open that's very reminiscent of The Terminator. And there's a lot of references, I think, to the 80s sci-fi movies and 80s horror movies as well. So, yeah, there you go.
Speaking of The Terminator, Linda Hamilton is actually in season 5.
Well, there you go. The Duffer Brothers are obviously fans of the 80s and Gen X, and that's a good thing. I mean, I'm happy. And locally, the other interesting cultural news is that we got Don Mattingly.
Oh, that's right. They did. I saw that as I was walking in.
Yeah.
I hope that leads us to get Boba Fett, because I do not
want Boba Fett. Isn't he in Star Wars? Boba Fett.
Yeah. Let's go with that. Boba Fett. Yeah. But big fan of Don Mattingly. Big fan of the work he did in Toronto. Should have won the World Series, but you know, what can you do? But I'm glad he's here.
And apparently there was a football game on Sunday. Why did we play the junior varsity team? Why did we put in our JV players?
So apparently Sirianni thought it was more important to have the starters healthy rather than risk injury than to play for the second seed, which would have given us an extremely easier matchup. Playing an injured Green Bay team instead of now we have to play the 49ers.
I'm not happy about this. Yes, Matt?
And the two seed. I was going to say, and the two seed would have guaranteed you had two home games in the playoffs. They would have had a home game in round one, and they would have guaranteed themselves a home game in round two. And now, more likely than not, they'll have to be on the road in round two.
So we're going to have to play San Francisco, and from what I understand, they're pretty good.
San Francisco is pretty good, and there's a chance they get one of their best defensive players back, I think in time for the game on Sunday, and that frightens me.
Now, what happens if we don't win on Sunday?
Oh.
Are we done?
Oh, yeah, we're done.
Yeah, that's it.
This is it.
No, that's it. Like, we go home, you mean?
Yeah, like, we're done. Game
this
over.
Is make or break it.
Yeah, one and done.
Die.
Okay, and we're playing in San Francisco?
Philadelphia.
Oh, thank God. All right, so at least we got that, because that helped us yesterday. But I'm watching this game, and the whole time I'm sitting there going, is Jalen hurt or something? Is hurts, but I mean, is he hurt? And then I realized what the strategy was to not put him in so he couldn't get hurt, which is helpful so that he doesn't get hurt in the games that he won't be playing in after we lose to San Francisco. So, great.
Well, all the starters were just sitting there, and I think a lot of people, and Sirianni was probably one of them, didn't believe that Chicago was going to lose to Detroit, because Detroit hasn't been that good, and Chicago has been dominant. So in order to get the two seed, two things had to happen. Chicago had to lose, Eagles had to win. Late in the third quarter, it looked as though Chicago was going to lose that game somehow. I wanted to see the starters come in off the bench, like get Jalen a series or two and see if they can't score a touchdown.
Well, that's what I understand. Why can't they do that? Is it a situation where if they don't start, they can't play at all?
No, they can play.
So, I mean, we're losing. Why not say fourth quarter, you guys get off the go in and play. I know this is not a strength of mine, analyzing sports, but that just seemed the kind of thing to me where I'm going, get the hell off the bench and go play. We're losing here. And I was just very frustrated by that. So
I think everybody was, especially because Devontae Smith did play a portion of that game, and the receivers were, I don't want to be mean to the backups, they are backups, but they were pretty terrible in that game.
Be mean. They were never the right place.
Yeah. Ugh. And Devontae would have given him a huge boost in the final two drives. So I don't know why at least he didn't come back out onto the field.
Well, anyway, screw you for being in Scottsdale. That's all I wanted to say.
I hope I don't get sunburned.
Oh, shut up. You know what? I hope you do. I hope you get I hope you get the kind of sunburn you have to go to the hospital and you need a skin graft. That's what I hope. That's my All right, I went to a dark place. So let's liven it up with a nice Trump clip, shall we? And brighten everybody's day. Oh, and I forgot to tell you guys, over break, I hate to embarrass my daughter. I embarrassed my son last week on Jimmy's show by saying that he has his first crush. We went up to Fox News. I took my daughter, Claire, with me to when I hosted Jimmy's show. I was supposed to do America's Newsroom that morning, but we had to move things around. But we still went up there, did Jimmy's show in studio, took Claire to see the Rockettes, and we had a great time. Saw the Christmas tree, did a little window shopping, a little shopping at Macy's. It was about, I think it was negative 47 degrees. At least it felt that way, negative 47 degrees. In Rockefeller Center, so I really have no sympathy for you. But here's the thing. We're in there. I'm on the air. And the program director at Fox News Radio comes into the studio when I'm on break and says, your daughter just got sick. Claire threw up, my little girl. But luckily, she was okay. She was good. She was fine, and we were still able to go to the show, and she was just something she ate, and she was okay. But she has left her mark on Fox News now. There will always be like a Claire Zioli plaque in Fox News. So she's going to kill me that I'm saying this on the radio right now. She's going to kill me. But, and then the other thing is that my daughter Reagan got her ears pierced. 5 years old, got her ears pierced, and she was very brave. They say to do it when they're young. This way they don't really think about the pain. And boom, one and done, and that's that. So there you go. And we got a dog, and yeah, that's it. That's everything. You're all caught up. Till I announce what I'm going to announce at 5 o'clock, and so you're not totally caught up. But there you go. All right. Well, after I wish Matt DeSantis a melanoma, why don't we liven the show up by
say it twice.
Just making sure everybody's paying attention. The president saying this was one of the most stunning, effective, and powerful displays of American military might. This is from the press conference that he had on Saturday, cut number 3.
Late last night and early today, at my direction, the United States Armed Forces conducted an extraordinary military operation in the capital of Venezuela. Overwhelming American military power, air, land, and sea, was used to launch a spectacular assault. And it was an assault like people have not seen since World War II. It was a force against a heavily fortified military fortress in the heart of Caracas to bring outlaw dictator Nicolas Maduro to justice. This was one of the most stunning, effective, and powerful displays of American military might and competence in American history. And if you think about it, we've done some other good ones, like the attack on Soleimani, the attack on al-Baghdadi, and the obliteration and decimation of the Iran nuclear sites just recently in an operation known as Midnight Hammer. All perfectly executed and done. No nation in the world could achieve what America achieved yesterday, or frankly, in just a short period of time. All Venezuelan military capacities were rendered powerless as the men and women of our military, working with U.S. law enforcement, successfully captured Maduro in the dead of night. It was dark. The lights of Caracas were largely turned off due to a certain expertise that we have. It was dark and it was deadly. But captured along with his wife, Celia Flores, both of whom now face American justice.
So the execution, the operation was just amazing. It really was. It was something to behold, and no doubt about it. It was flawless. Almost to the point where, and this is what I was saying in the 3 o'clock hour, it's almost as if it was orchestrated because it was so done with such precision. But I also think the military there hates the guy's guts. I mean, I don't think they're going to shed tears for Maduro because he was an illegitimate leader of the country. I've said this to you before. I am not for regime change. I don't believe that that is what the United States should be engaged in. But he also was not in charge of his country. I mean, he was not the duly elected leader of his country. And I don't think this was about regime change. But we are now going to cash in on the oil. That's for sure. And the impact on the oil market is going to be massive, and it's going to be huge. And there are going to be implications for that that have to do with Iran and Russia and China. And it's going to be a big deal. No doubt about it. True. People saying that Maduro was probably very happy to see the Delta Force and not SEAL Team 6. I can't help but wonder. I can't help but wonder if Maduro knew it was up and it was over. And if I'm a soldier in Venezuela, I see the American military coming in. I'm not putting up a fight. Not for that guy. You know what I mean? And then the problem is, if you put up a fight, you're going to have a bigger fight. And that's the other problem here, too. But I think it was said, and I have this quote from this this journalist who hates Trump. This is Cut 26. This is a journalist. Her name is Germania Rodriguez Polco. She's not a fan of Trump. And there are people who are irate over the capture of Maduro. And what she said here in this clip, I think, is pretty accurate in terms of how people feel about him. Cut 26.
Now a message to my English-speaking friends, because I'm already seeing people are organizing protests, hands off Venezuela, let's defend Maduro, we love dictators. Do not, for a moment, let your hatred and disdain for Donald Trump, an unsavory character, have you defending the dictator of my country that was destroyed by him and Chavez and their system 20 years ago. We Venezuelans are very, very happy that our dictator has been arrested, removed, and will be put through a trial. It's the first time we're seeing justice in 26 years. Now let's hope that they get the rest of the criminals out of Venezuela, and then we can return home.
It's not far from some places that people vacation a lot. I mean, and I was joking about Caracas becoming a new destination for an all-inclusive resort. Country's got a lot of great potential. It's got a lot of oil, and it's got a lot of money. And the reality of the situation here is that if the guy who won the election is able to return to power, and that's really what I think should happen here, is that he won. It's a mixed bag because there's these issues too regarding these leases that American oil companies have with Venezuela that then Chavez and Maduro both just came in. Really, Chavez came in and just terminated those leases. And you know, the argument is that he stole all this oil that belonged to these American oil companies, and there was the theft of that oil. And so it's all very complicated. The bottom line is Maduro facing justice in an American prison system, the precedent of Manuel Noriega doing the exact same thing, having the exact same fate fall upon him is why this is going to be viewed as a legal process by the president of the United States in doing so. In the getting a guy who was wanted in the United States of America, who had multiple arrest warrants on him, and arguing that he was not really, truly the duly elected president of Venezuela. And he wasn't. So, do I want to see the United States of America stay in Venezuela and rebuild the country? No, I really have no interest in doing all those things. I don't think it's going to have to be that way, though. The administration officials are going to brief on this shortly, but Dr. Coats will have greater insight into this than I do, certainly. But I think it's a situation where it's probably going to work out pretty quickly, I would imagine, in a beneficial way, considering how much oil is at stake here, considering how much money is at stake, and considering the fact that, you know, the message has been sent here, which is, you know, we're not messing around. So, but I get it. I mean, I understand, and I'm acutely aware of the constitutional questions regarding all these things. And you know that I spend my time reading this stuff, and I don't jump to conclusions. I don't rush to social media to either cheer or to decry something until I get until I read everything I can and form my opinions and the basis of that. The fact that this is a law enforcement operation and not a military operation, which is what the justification is going to be, is not going to silence Democrats who want to use this as an opportunity to go after Donald Trump. The problem for them, though, is then they're defending a dictator who lost the election and was brutal to his people. And they keep screaming about stolen elections. They keep screaming about dictators and how they hate them. And this guy is the very embodiment of that. So from a political perspective, it's not a good look. In my opinion, if you're AOC and you're Bernie Sanders and you're other people, like, I understand why Tom Massey is upset. I get it. I do. I mean, he believes that the president should have gone to Congress. I haven't really seen much from Rand Paul on this other than Venezuela is a socialist disaster. And I mean, it failed and everything like this. But I understand why there are certain people who believe, constitutionally speaking, that the president should have gone to Congress to ask for authorization. I think the jury's out on that. I don't think it's as crystal clear based on everything I've read. I mean, I'm not a constitutional lawyer, but based on that, I don't think it's as black and white as that. And then the other question, of course, is, you know, what happens then to these other countries. Now, Colombian Defense Minister Pedro Sanchez has invited the Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth, to come to Colombia for a firsthand look at its drug fighting efforts, which the United States has criticized, saying, "I invite him here to Colombia so that this soldier can meet that great soldier and witness firsthand the strength and determination of the Colombian government led by the President of the Republic to dismantle and eradicate drug trafficking at its roots." He added that Colombia is deeply appreciative of its concern with the United States, which he has said made the fight more effective. My guess is these other countries in the region that are dealing with drugs that the United States is accusing of aiding and abetting the drug trade into the United States of America. My guess is these countries are going to turn around and say, "All right, look, we don't need indictments coming down on us in criminal court. We don't need to have the United States of America come in and extract us in a law enforcement move in the middle of the night, saying that we're complicit in the drug trade and charging us with, you know, 42 counts in federal court of drug trafficking in the United States of America. We don't need this. We don't want this. So we're going to clean up our act." I mean, this sets a precedent that was set before. I mean, it's not the first time the United States has done something like this, obviously. I mean, Obama did it with Libya, with Gaddafi. Bill Clinton did it. I mean, George H.W. Bush did it. I'm just saying that I think that the other countries would probably be very wise to issue similar statements to what Colombia issued. And I think first and foremost that the president of Mexico, Claudia Sheinbaum, who has a good relationship with Trump, and the president said, you know, she's a nice lady, but the cartels are running that country. I think this is her chance. And I've said this before, invite the United States of America in to battle the drug cartels, go side by side and do that. And, you know, get the protection of, because she's worried about her own life, obviously. and she's worried that the cartels will kill her, and they would. So get the protection of the United States of America and, you know, fight the drug cartels. I would think that that's probably the resolution that you're going to see with that, at least in the short term, the interim. Now, if she's controlled by the drug cartels, if she's there because they put her there and she's actually, you know, part of that, which also is not surprising, then that becomes a much more complex situation. But Mexico is not Venezuela, and any military action with Mexico, in my opinion, absolutely has to be coordinated through Congress. And I don't think that's a hard leap either. I think you just get a congressional resolution to, you know, go fight the drug cartels. And then there you go. You have your congressional authorization and, you know, you're good to go. You solve that potential constitutional question, just like with the drug boats, too. Same thing. And I said, you know, it's smart of the president to think about doing that, to inoculate him from a future Democrat majority in the House that decides to impeach him on these things. But in the short term, the it's a bad look for Democrats to be defending Maduro. It just is. It's a bad political look. It's a bad look. And the guy was ruthless. The guy was not duly elected president. The guy was a dictator who, you know, drove out the opposition. They drove out the guy who won. And it was a criminal residing in the presidential palace with multiple arrest warrants on him by the United States of America. And the United States has a long history of working with Interpol to track down fugitives in foreign countries who are wanted by the United States government. So it's not like the first time we've arrested somebody on foreign soil, and it's probably not going to be the last time we've arrested somebody on foreign soil. The fact that the military was used in the effort doesn't change the fact that the guy was wanted on all these criminal charges. I just think other world leaders in the region probably don't want to be wanted on criminal charges. That's my guess of how that plays out. All right, we got a lot to talk about. We'll talk about it with our buddy, Dr. Victoria Coates, the impact on Iran, China, et cetera, et cetera. That is the big story of the hour, brought to you by Dr. Mike Venaria. Let 2026 be the year you get your beautiful smile. Dental implants, get your free implant consultation by going to VenariaDental.com. VanariA, VenariaDental.com. Two locations serve you in Cinnaminson and Woodbury. We'll be right back.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
Well, that music can only mean one thing. Days like today, it's amazing she makes time for us because she's in high demand, but she's loyal. She's a Philly girl. That's how they roll. She is the vice president of the Davis Institute for Foreign Policy and National Security at the Heritage Foundation and the former deputy national security advisor to President Donald Trump, author of the book Battle for the Jewish State, and a very proud mama today, Dr. Victoria Coates. How are you, my friend?
Well, it's been a big weekend in the Coates household, Rich. I was just telling Justin that as the news was breaking of the Maduro action in Venezuela, I was actually getting up early because our daughter was married.
Amazing.
Saturday. So a lot went on.
And yet you still found time to be on every major network talking about what happened in Venezuela. So that's really impressive.
Yeah, our team made it easy on me, and Gardner, our daughter, declared a hard stop at 9 o'clock in the morning, so we got it done, and then it was time for hair and makeup.
Good. Very nice. Well done. Well, congratulations to you and your daughter and the whole family, and it's great news. And are they on their honeymoon? Are they going to Caracas, or is it not open yet for business?
Not Caracas yet, but, you know, it could open up to be a really major destination. They are on their honeymoon, and the cute thing, I was just listening to it, Senator Cruz was at the wedding, and he talked about it on his podcast today because January 3rd was not just the day we scooped up Maduro. It also is the anniversary of the action against Qasem Soleimani 6 years ago and the anniversary of picking up Manuel Noriega out of Panama.
Right.
And now it's our daughter's anniversary, and it's the anniversary of the day Ted met Heidi, his wife.
So, well, there you go.
Yeah, we are ones who celebrate January 3rd.
We will celebrate January 3rd, not January 4th, though, given the way the Eagles played yesterday.
Yeah, that was tragic, and we're going to move on to next weekend.
Yeah, I'm not. Well, you know, we'll just be optimistic. It's all we can say, right? We'll be optimistic. Yeah. All right. And we got Don Mattingly as a coach for the Phillies, as a batting coach. So there, you know, that's good. The good news there.
I think it's great news. He's such a great baseball guy, and will have a lot of respect in the clubhouse. So I think that'll be fantastic.
Yeah, I agree with you. Absolutely. All right. So let's talk about the other big story besides your daughter's wedding. And that's, of course, obviously the action against Maduro. Let's talk about the international implications of all this. And specifically now, the oil that's there and what they were doing with it up until the moment that he was snatched out of his bedroom the other night.
Right. And that's why Venezuela matters. And there are two things that they have. Or three things, actually. They have the world's largest oil reserves. They have very significant gold reserves. And they're proximate to the United States. So for all of these reasons, Venezuela commands our attention. And you go back 50, 60 years, they were one of the most prosperous countries on the planet. I think they were in the top four, is my recollection. And they were a great friend to the United States. And unfortunately, you know, one of many things that happened in the 1990s after the fall of the Berlin Wall, unrealized opportunities, is when Hugo Chavez became the essentially a socialist dictator of Venezuela, the United States didn't do anything about it. I think we assumed that the tide of history was in our favor, that everyone would become a liberal democracy if just given time, and we didn't have to worry so much about that. And if we had really pushed back against Chavez then and cut off, for example, Cuba from cheap Venezuelan energy, we would have many fewer problems today, but we didn't. Bill Clinton thought we were on a holiday from history, and turns out that wasn't the case. And we've had this festering problem now for three decades. And, you know, it became really acute during the Biden administration, when Venezuela has been the key regional proponent of both unfettered immigration into the United States and unfettered trafficking of drugs. And that is what was different from the first Trump term, when the president came back in and he just said this situation is intolerable. And as it happens, at the end of the first term, then Attorney General Bill Barr had indicted Nicolas Maduro as a drug kingpin and a terrorist. And so there was an active indictment against him. And that's what the president acted on over the weekend.
And the Biden administration put a bounty on his head, right?
Exactly. I mean, I think there is general bipartisan agreement that he is a very, very bad person and an enemy of the United States. And so, yes, I think it was $25 million on him. And so it's not that anybody thinks he's a good idea for Venezuela. And then in July of 2024, they had one of their normal mock elections, which by all estimates, he lost by 80%, and he declared victory. And so he isn't even the legitimately duly elected leader of Venezuela. He's a fraud and a dictator. And so that argument doesn't hold any water either.
All right. Now, the president has said we're going to govern Venezuela in the short run here. What does that look like? How does that work?
Well, basically, what you need to do, and Venezuela can actually invite us in to do this. There's a history of the United States providing technocratic assistance to countries in particularly severe economic distress, which Venezuela is. So we can provide expertise from our Treasury and our Commerce Department, that kind of institution, to help them build institutions, help wean them off of communism and socialism, back onto a free system. And we've been watching that play out in Argentina, which after the election of President Milei has been engaged in very severe, quite painful economic reforms, but they're coming out the other side with U.S. assistance out of the Treasury Department to help them make that transition. That can happen. That should be highly desirable. American energy majors can go as well. Chevron's still there by the skin of their teeth, but there are others that can go back in to help them modernize their oil facilities. And that's great and good for the United States. People are saying, well, why would we want that oil? You know, why isn't that competition for us? Actually, it's not. It's a downstream opportunity for the United States, because we have the refineries for the Venezuelan oil. And that's what was just bought by, I guess, Elliott international management at essentially a sheriff's sale. So the ownership of those refineries are moving out of Citgo into American hands. Those refineries are all in Houston, and there's some in Louisiana. So opportunity for American refiners to process that crude and then sell it. So this is a good thing for us if that relationship is stronger.
And then let's talk, Dr. Victoria Coates, if we could, about what this means then for Cuba. She mentioned that Cuba was getting all this cheap Venezuelan oil. It's obvious that Secretary of State Marco Rubio does not want to see the regime in Cuba continue. Do you just cut them off from the oil? And then what happens then?
Yeah, that would be, I think, the logical move. The president said last night he didn't really think action was going to be required from us. I think that's probably true, because after, again, the fall of the Berlin Wall, patronage of Cuba went from the Soviets to Venezuela. And that's what's been keeping the now post-Castro communist regime in power. And that's a major issue for us. Bear in mind, Cuba's 90 miles off of the shores of Florida. The major national security crisis of the second half of the 20th century was the Cuban Missile Crisis, when the Soviets put nuclear weapons that close to the United States. That was probably the most danger we were in during the Cold War. And so that is a problem. And we haven't been able to get Castro out of power yet, or the Castro regime, rather, out of power yet. But if you cut off this last supply, China hasn't shown itself particularly willing to engage in that kind of economic patronage that the Soviets and the Venezuelans had participated in. The Russians aren't really in a position to do it at this point. So you really could cause a change in Cuba. And if we focus on it and help them, that could be a great benefit to the United States, too.
So then where does that leave Iran? Where does that leave China? And where does that leave Russia?
Well, it's been an interesting year for the Axis of Evil. These kind of loosely affiliated anti-American vassal states, for want of a better word, to China. So we've got the Iranians, we've got the Russians, we've got the Venezuelans, that they all have been under various degrees of distress. And China really hasn't done that much. You know, the Iranians were completely exposed as a paper tiger during the 12-day war by first Israel, then by the United States. You know, Russia is really bogged down in Ukraine. You know, we can get into that, but it's certainly not looking great for them. Maybe not great for Ukraine either, but they're certainly not holding victory parades in Moscow this week. And China's just not doing anything about it. So I think other countries around the world should be looking at this and thinking, gee, is it so great to engage with China? Do they really make good on their their promises? They say that we're inconsistent and unpredictable. Well, how do we know what they're going to do? Right. So I think this was a very bad day for Chairman Xi. The other person who I think should be, if he's not already, shaking in his boots is the supreme leader of Iran, because the president's been very strong on that situation as well.
So, Dr. Coates, then, going back to Venezuela for a second, and a question that has come up as well, is that apparently Venezuela is technically supposed to hold an election within 30 days if the president's absence is permanent. However, the Venezuelan Supreme Court, stacked with his supporters, his supporters, has ruled that given the extraordinary circumstances of Maduro's absence, it needs to study the question. Would they hold an election? Do they need to hold the election? And the person who is in power now, the vice president who's in power at this moment right now, where does she stand with regards to American politics? And then the other question is the guy who won the election, the true winner of the last election. What happens to that guy?
Right. So the vice president, Rodriguez, has been sworn in as the temporary president of Venezuela. And so that's where she is. And she is a socialist. She is a far leftist, has been heavily anti-American, anti-Israel, anti-Semitic, all these bad things. And I think that, you know, we shouldn't have any illusions that she's somehow a friend to the United States. But she also knows how vulnerable she is. And so she started a little bit of chirping, and Secretary Rubio smacked her down pretty hard, and she changed her tune. So I think she knows she's serving at the pleasure of the United States at this point. She doesn't have to like it, but self-preservation will kick in. Now, that said, the winner of the election in 2024, Ernesto Gustavo, he's been in Madrid in sort of self-imposed exile. The very popular opposition figure, Maria Corina Machado, the one who just won the Nobel Peace Prize, had been prohibited by Maduro from running. I don't think there's any preordained issue of who can and can't run anymore. I think that should be an open field, that anybody who wants to run for president should be able to and make the case. My hope is that the people of Venezuela coalesce strongly behind one strong candidate then and figure out, you know, what the policies are that they want to support. But I think having that election will be critical for the progress of the country.
And do you think we'll let that election play out, or would we orchestrate that?
Oh, I think we'll let it play out. But I think there is no popular basis of support for Maduro anymore. Mm-hmm. That's what was demonstrated by the 2024 election. And so, you know, that really is going to be a question for the people of Venezuela. And, you know, the clear message from Washington has to be that the immigration and the drugs have to stop. Those are our bottom line issues. You know, once that is achieved, you know, then it really does become a question for the people of Venezuela.
Okay, and sorry to be distracted for a moment, Dr. Coates. We got a puppy. We got Gary.
Oh,
you saw.
Hi, Gary.
Over the weekend, and my wife is just asking me, she has to run out, if she should crate Gary or leave him to roam
always,
free. And I said,
always crate Gary.
Crate. Yeah, you got to go crate. You got to crate. All right. Now, in thinking in terms of, you have an election. Socialism is very unpopular in the country. Maduro was unpopular. He lost by 80% of the vote. You have a new leader who steps in, fills that void, and then wants to partner with the United States of America. And then everything you said earlier about working with the oil companies, getting those refineries up to speed. I know Venezuelan crude is dirtier than American crude, so you refine that. You do all those things. I mean, that's a big win for them. So I would imagine that would be the case. But how do the people of Venezuela feel? We've seen a lot of pictures of Americans, Venezuelans in America celebrating that Maduro's gone. But I know he's not popular, but how do the people of Venezuela feel about the United States of America coming in and grabbing the president, whether he's duly elected or not, and leaving in the middle of the night? I mean, do they care? Does that become an election issue for them? How does that work?
I don't think so. Now, there's a lot of hard work to be done when you have an event like this now in terms of starting to provide benefits for this action to both the American and the Venezuelan people. What they want to see is relief. They want to see, I mean, they've had this just obscene situation with inflation. It's similar to what's going on in Iran. Their currency is basically useless. So they do have to go through these reforms. But as with Argentina, the Argentinian people are eager to go through this process to get to a better place. They just had a very positive election for President Milei, which they didn't think they were going to have, because it can be difficult to get through it. I think if the Venezuelan people see a clear path to the kind of prosperity their grandparents had, and that the United States is a partner in that, and then they also see it in neighboring countries, because they can see what's happening in, say, tiny landlocked Paraguay to the south, which has a tremendous president, Santiago Peña, and is becoming a regional powerhouse, that's a really positive development. And, you know, if they had similar policies, they could do that. They've seen, you know, the progress in El Salvador with rule of law and getting after the cartels and the gangs. That is possible. So mm-hmm. They're going to want to see that progress. And if that happens, I don't think they're going to care too much quite how we got there.
All right. And then before I let you go, I would be remiss if I didn't ask about Colombia and Mexico, because I saw today that the equivalent of Secretary Hegseth in Colombia is saying, I would like you to come to our country and see what we're doing to fight the cartels. Obviously, the president said that he likes Mexican President Claudia Sheinbaum very much, but that the cartels control the country there. It's obvious that the Trump doctrine is going to be very similar to the Monroe doctrine. This is our hemisphere. We're sick of the drug trafficking. We're sick of it. And we're going to go after it. We're going to fight it. And I think these other countries would be smart to, you know, wake up and get a clue. But how much power do these presidents really have? Like, how much power does Sheinbaum really have over the cartels? And how much power does the president of Colombia really have over the drug cartels? And how involved are these people in it? I mean, is this just a game of three-card Monty with these people? Or are they sincere in their words of actually trying to fight the drug trafficking?
Well, I actually think there's a big opportunity in Colombia. They have elections coming up, I believe, this May, and some really excellent candidates are running. Petro can't run for re-election, so there will be a change. You know, what it changes into, we'll have to see. But what you're seeing out of their military are the existing, longstanding, particularly counter-narcotic relationships between the Colombian military and the U.S. military and our related apparatus for doing counter-narcotics. That used to be a huge success story for us. That was called Plan Colombia during the George W. Bush administration, and we made tremendous progress against the FARC, against the terrorist elements in Colombia. Really good progress on drugs. That can be revived because those relationships are still there. And so Petro is going to be transitory. I think he's probably pretty nervous right now, seeing what just happened to Maduro. Something that would have seemed incomprehensible 72 hours ago is now a fact. And so he may be singing a different tune. Now, Mexico, even more proximate to the United States, obviously a direct border issue with us, one of our biggest trading partners. And, you know, you do have significant portions of the country under control of these vicious cartels. And, you know, I haven't seen anything out of Claudia Sheinbaum to make me think, you know, she is going to have the spine to actually stand up to them. She would complaining over, bless you, over the weekend about the fact that the president's action violated Article 2 of the United Nations Charter. And I'm like, well, that's nice. Guess what's not binding law in the United States? The United Nations Charter, but guess right. what is? The U.S. Constitution, and under Article 2 of that document, he has plenty of authority to do this. So I thought that was just kind of a weak kind of pandering to the international community on her part that doesn't bode well for the future, but it's an immediate problem for us, so we're going to have to keep working on it.
And unlike Maduro, I mean, she is a duly elected president. I mean, she did win the election, right? So and it's more complicated because it is on our border, to your point. So going and kidnapping her in the middle of the night may not solve the problem. It may not. But isn't it an opportunity? Right. But isn't it an opportunity for her to maybe try to partner with the United States and say, well, then help me go after the cartels and let's finally do something about this?
Well, it would be. And if she's smart, she'll take it. Because I think, you know, the president has been pretty clear. He does not let personal politics dictate his international relationships. That's why he works with somebody like Keir Starmer. I mean, does he wish Nigel Farage was the prime minister of the United Kingdom? I'm sure he does. Would it be easier? I'm sure it would be. But Starmer is who he is. You have to work with him. Claudia is who she is. If we're going to have a functional relationship, they have to work together. He's proven he can do that. And I think his offers of assistance against the cartels are sincere. And I think Mexico should take them.
Dr. Victoria Coates, always a pleasure. Thanks for making time for us. I know you're super busy and in very high demand all over Fox News and everything else. So we appreciate it, my friend. And again, congratulations to your daughter. That's great news for your family.
It really is. Enjoy Gary.
Thanks.
Talk soon.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break, but I want to tell you about my friends at Emmons Roofing and Siding, because on Wednesday of this week, they're coming to finalize everything with the kids remodeling, and then a week from today, the demolition begins on the kids' bathroom. So I'm really excited about that. Emmons is your one-stop shop for all things with your home. Now, with this freezing cold winter we have, you got to look at your roof, and you got to make sure your roof is okay and that it's strong and that can withstand the elements, and that's what Emmons is all about. They are platinum certified by Owens Corning. Owens Corning Shingle is the best in the business, and they don't just hand out that designation. You have to really work hard for it, and that's what Emmons is all about. So I would love for you to reach out to them today. Talk to my buddy Matt Kelly and his great team. And it's American-made products, too. The Owens Corning shingle, American-made roofing product. The siding, made in America. The windows and doors they use, made in America. So you got that great local craftsmanship from a company in our region. Serves Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Delaware, and the Jersey Shore. And in addition to that, you're getting American-made products, too, from a company that I've used in two different homes over the course of 12 years. So please, reach out to them today by going to emmonsroofing.com. Get a free estimate. Remember, lifetime warranty on your roof. Not just the materials, but also the workmanship as well. That's what you get with Emmons. EmmonsRoofing.com, EmmonsRoofing.com.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.